It's Paul Hamilton.
We should be friends.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
Fanuff just pooped his pants.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Paul's going to join us on the Western Hotline and talk some hockey with us. And his segment is brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. Paul, how are you?
How'd you like that Mets trade?
Okay, let me just scratch you off my Christmas list.
Robinson
Cano?
I'm not a big fan of it. He's 36. He costs a lot of money. And not a huge fan of it, quite honestly. They need his bat, you know, but not a big fan of it.
All right. I thought you'd enjoy it.
No, and Diaz is fine. They got a good closer out of it. But their biggest problem is the guys who, before the closer, the middle relievers blew leads all year last year.
Hey, next year should be a great one for you guys.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Looking up.
Let's go, Mets! Is it sad that I already looked at the road schedule trying to figure out, hey, they're going to be in L.A. next year. I think I'll take a week and go to L.A.
There you go.
This is what being a fan is. We can yell and scream and tell them how much they suck, and then we go, when can I go see them play again? You want to go with me, Paul? L.A., last week of May.
So you're saying it's sad that this trade improves their team.
Well, they needed... No, it, Paul... He's got 5 years left on a $120 million contract, and he's 36.
Well, you're still paying Bonilla, aren't you?
Technically, you're correct, Paul. Thank you for pointing that out. I brought you on to talk hockey, not baseball. Okay, Mr. Wise ass? Can we just get to the hockey now?
Paul, have you ever been – we asked you about Seattle the other day. Have you been out there for Western Hockey League games or ever play anywhere in the state of Washington? I don't know. I wonder how you feel about Seattle as a market or as a hockey area, the Northwest.
I played against Seattle in a national tournament, but it wasn't there.
Okay.
I believe it was in Fort Wayne. But, no, I've never actually played or been to a game there. So, you know, apparently people say that it's a good market for hockey, but, again, I haven't witnessed it myself.
It'll be interesting to see because aren't they on some level – like a version of the Sabres being introduced with the Leafs right up there. You know, you have so many fans of the Leafs, and then the Sabres become a franchise. And if you are, I don't know, if you're a Leafs fan that can't ever get to those games in 1970, you might say, like, I'll watch this new team. And Vancouver might, I don't know if they'd have fans necessarily leave, but I think about the Nationals with this, with Baltimore. Anytime you go someplace where there's already a pretty, pretty established team pretty close by, it probably works well for you. You can count on Vancouver fans wanting to see some hockey, if nothing else.
The only problem is from, and I've never crossed the border there, but from what I understand, it's like four times harder to cross the border there than it is here in Buffalo. Hmm. It takes a long, long time. So that could be a problem. It's not like a snap to get over that border.
Yeah.
So that might be something, but again, I haven't tried it, so I don't know.
143 miles apart, Seattle and Vancouver.
Well, that's close. That's right. It's a little beyond us in Syracuse, right? Like, right? What's Syracuse? 120 from here?
About that. A little more.
Bad. Hey, Paul. Here's the article I expect from you today at WGR550.com. I want the Sabres protected list for the next expansion draft. Go. Apparently, some people are already freaking out about it. So go put it together.
Of course they are. Yeah. And the thing is, you only lose one player. But as people are freaking out about, you would have thought they'd lose like nine of them.
I hope it's not Eichel, by the way. Hey, listen. I know you know you're a reporter. It's your job to cover the games. But do you ever walk away from a game, and I'm leading you with this question because that's what I thought you would have done Tuesday night. Do you ever walk away from a game going, man, that was fun? Because Tuesday night was that game for me.
It sounds like almost what I wrote after that game. You know, what a hockey game. It was so much fun. And both teams deserve to win. Both teams deserve to get points. Neither team deserved to lose. It was that type of a game. And, of course, it ends with 2.7 seconds left in overtime. That was kind of a fitting end to it, too. I think we needed to see as much hockey as possible in that hockey game. And that's a good game for national television. If you tuned in and you're not a hockey fan, oh, I'm going to give hockey a try.
Yeah.
And watch that game. You know, if you didn't become a fan of hockey after watching that, then you probably never will.
I saw your tweet or your retweet of what Kenny Albert had said, and he was calling the play-by-play, and apparently people were tweeting me and telling me that basically Pierre Maguire spent the whole night gushing about Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, I there's a delay, so I put it on for a little while in my headsets. It was hard for me just because I had to watch the game ahead and then listen to him, but I just wanted to hear some of the things he was saying.
Yeah,
and he was talking about Dahlin and, you know, the plays that he could make and say, well, even a bad play, he'd say, yeah, but he'll learn. You know, that wasn't a play that he wants to make there, but, you know, you've got the lead and you just got the lead and you don't want to make a pass like that, but he'll learn. It's not a big deal. And, you know, things like that. So, yeah, he was very impressed with him for the little bit I listened to.
I was just impressed with the Sabres' effort, Paul, and not just effort, but how they played, because I was really in fear of this game for numerous reasons, including Toronto's really good. And the Sabres had, you know, and this was really the end of a grueling stretch of 11 games in 19 days, a back-to-back, playing in Nashville after being in Florida for a couple games. And I thought they're not going to have much in terms of legs, and this could get really, it could get out of control. And instead, it was the exact opposite. The Sabres came out, and they dominated Toronto in the first period. They took the play to the Leafs, and they played with energy throughout the course of the game.
And I think that helped them, that they got out fast. You know, they didn't have to skate into the game like sometimes they have to do. Isn't it strange? In my opinion, their best two games of the last month, they lost them both.
Oh, the Rangers game.
Yeah, Ranger game and this game.
Right.
I thought were their best two games of the month, and they lost them both. And just that's kind of goofy the way sports goes sometimes. But I think that's one of the things that really helped them is they came out fast. They were out shooting the Leafs 11-3, and I think that's kind of stemmed them for the whole game. Had they come out like they sometimes do, and it's like, they're not too good, and maybe a little better in the second, and then they dominate the third. That seems to be the way they handle things sometimes, and I'm not sure it would have gone as well. I think they needed that boost right off the bat, say, all right, the fans are in this game, we're into this game, let's go.
Paul's with us on our Western Hotline, 803-0550. You have the Sabres question or comment for him. I thought Rasmus Ristolainen had a tremendous game the other night, but you went to another level. You tweeted out you thought it was not just his best game of the season, but one of his best games as a Sabre. Why?
Because he was just on top. You know how I talk about I wish he would get more involved in the offense?
Oh, boy, was he in that. He was just driving to the net that night.
My wish was granted, and I think that was one of the big reasons why they spent so much time in Toronto's zone, is because he played so much, and every time he got on the ice, he would get the puck and get it inside the zone and get things to the crease and make things happen and get scoring opportunities right off the bat, his first shift.
Yeah.
Came right in, came around the net, set up Rodriguez for a great chance. And that was his first shift right there. And I just thought he was a ton of strength out there. And defensively, you know, because in the first period, maybe the last, what do you want to say, 3-4 minutes, Toronto had their kick at the can in the first period. And I thought he was very good then, too, defending. So, you know, it wasn't just the offensive part of it. It was his overall game. He got a hit or two in. And I just thought, and lately I think he's been better. You know, I was kind of down on him for a while there. I didn't like his game. But lately, I think he's played much better. But that was kind of the cherry on top of the sundae, you know. I just thought that was a monster game for him.
You also tweeted you thought it was a learning experience for Mittelstadt. What did you see from him that made you want to do that, tweet that?
Yeah, he struggled. And Phil Housley said with you guys, you know, I think Sal might have asked him that, why didn't Mittelstadt play in the overtime? And he just said he just was having a hard time. It wasn't his night. And, you know, I think he learned from it. I mean, he and Thompson, I think they're all both in the same boat. I think the youngsters got an education during that game. I think Lawrence Pilot got an education during that game. You know, he had some plays that he would like back. And when you're playing a fast team like that and a very good team like that, things happened quickly in that game, and the Sabres were playing fast also. And I just think it's a game that got away from Mittelstadt a little bit. I'm not worried about it. I think he'll be fine. I think it's just, he got into one of those games. He had never been in a game like that before. Thompson probably had never been in a game like that before, and it was a little too big for him. And, you know, Housley realized that, reduced their ice time somewhat, and as he said, he just didn't think overtime would have been the time to put him back out there.
Paul, things change from one year to the next. Last year, they were bad, and Phil Housley never really showed any emotion, and fans would ask you, does he get mad? Does he yell at them? And, you know, we would talk about how Phil Housley in the locker room and Phil Housley at the podium are two different things. You know, he's doing two different things. This year, you know, they have a game like that where Mittelstadt and Thompson, or if Dahlin has mistakes, you know, they're winning. So I don't think anybody thinks, does he go in there and scream at Mittelstadt? In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think that, at least from what we're seeing, Housley's done a nice job of realizing how young a lot of his guys are and kind of just taking them through it. So in your, I don't know, the way you've taken it away this year, to that issue, is he, I don't know, I don't want to say is he kinder, gentler. You know, we did the kinder, gentler Lindy Ruff thing for however many years. But how do you get the sense that Housley is with the players, with the young guys? Is he understanding? Is he demanding? Is he supportive? How is he working with a team that has so many young players? And, you know, they're hoping that this is the start of something.
I think he's both. And, Jeremy, he said himself, and I don't think it was just coach speak, that he had to learn from last year, too. And they asked the players, what are you going to do to change things? And I think he asked himself, what are you going to do to change things? And he did change things. And part of the summer process was, you know, they were golfing in Minnesota with, he was golfing with Mittelstadt and Eichel and Oposo. I don't know if Oposo was there. He might've been, and some other players. And he wanted to hear from the players. He wanted to know what they were thinking. That I think was different for him. I think he thought it was important to just know what they think of the team, know what they think of the dressing room, know what they think of things. And he's been doing that, staying with his leadership group. And I think part of him changing is exactly that. I think he knows when to coddle them, when to be hard on them, as far as the young players go. He's talked many times, so has Oposo, who sits next to Mittelstadt in the locker room, how hard he works off the ice, you know, watching film, watching his shifts, trying to learn from that, maybe watching another player play in those types of situations to see how they handle it. And that's what he'll do with that game. And I think what Housley will probably do, if he hasn't already, is have a coach sit with Mittelstadt for a film session and go over things with him and talk to him and let him know what he could have done better in certain situations. And he seems like a smart kid that will learn from that and play better, because as the season's gone on, you've seen him play a little bit better. I like the way Housley handled Dahlin, that he just didn't throw him out there for 29 minutes a game on the first week of the season. He worked him in, you know, played him a good amount, but just kind of worked him into, all right, you're new to North America. You're new to living in North America. Let's ease him in here a little bit. And then give him more responsibility as we move along. What did he play, 29 minutes the other game? You know, now he's starting to get more responsibility, but I liked how he worked him up to it. And it didn't take, he didn't do it all season. Sometimes with a rookie, you'll work him in all season. He just did it for about a month, and about midway through November, he started upping the ice time and upping the responsibility. And I liked the way they've handled him.
Well, overall, I was... It's now that you're talking about that, I'll get to this question. It's more of a larger picture with Housley. What do you think of how he's coached the team this season, of his strategy, whether it's O-zone starts, D-zone starts? I'm not talking about tinkering with forward combinations. Every coach does that. Managing, you know, who's out on the power play, I guess. You know what I'm getting to? Like the other night, someone tweeted at me. The other night, I don't even know how much ice time I got. That Skinner didn't get much ice time in overtime. And somebody else tweeted, you know, why is Larson out here? Why is Sobotka out there with Eichel instead of Skinner? I think it was for a face-off in the offensive zone. What do you think overall of his strategy and how he has handled games this season? Because now... that stuff matters. You know, last year, the season was dead by now. Now every game's important, and every decision the coach makes, we're going to look at.
Yeah, Skinner had come out to play a shift for overtime, and that's when the timeout came.
Okay.
The other team called timeout, and the faceoff was in the offensive zone. So he decided to go with Eichel.
Okay.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he has combinations in overtime. I'm not exactly sure how he's arrived at them. They've worked in some overtimes. They haven't in others. But he likes Eichel with Sherry together in overtime. That's just a combination he's used all year and liked it.
I've got no problem with that. I like Sherry, Paul. I thought when he was out of the lineup, they missed him in a big way. And
I agree.
And
yeah.
In three-on-three, he's, to me, the exact kind of skater that can be pretty good at getting the puck for you and also protecting it.
Yeah, so I think that's a good coaching move after the timeout to put Eichel, Dahlin. And I'm trying to think if Sherry was dressed that night. I can't think of if he was or not. And whoever it was with Eichel. I think that's a good move to put them out there. And he's done more of that. I think he's much better at that. Much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, we have it. You know, coming out of a timeout in the face of offensive zone, it's Eichel every time.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out every time. If it's a key defensive zone faceoff, he might have Eichel out there, but Larson will come take the draw. And then I get the tweets, why is Larson playing on Eichel's line? He's not.
Yeah, right.
He's taking the draw, and then he goes to the bench.
Off. Right.
Yeah. he seems to be much better at matching and putting players out in better starting positions to get them to succeed. I had a problem with a lot of what he did last year with that, and I think he's much better at that this year.
Good. One other thing about Pilot. We were talking about this with Marty Baron a little bit earlier this morning. And, you know, he's played well. He looks to be pretty calm and okay with the surroundings. Whenever all the defensemen are healthy, what do you do with Pilot? Does he go back to Rochester automatically and just keep playing down there? Do you say, you know what, let me give the kid another game or two and see if I need to keep him here? Or do you think he's done enough to say, I got to get him in my rotation right now?
The two games that I think have been a little problem for him was the Pittsburgh preseason game and then the last game. And last game, he made some good plays, too. It wasn't all bad, but he twice let guys get behind him for breakaways. It just seemed like the game was a little too fast for him against two hard-skating, talented teams. And Pittsburgh played that preseason game with most of their guns, and they played it like a regular season game. Crosby was on top of his game that night. Malkin was on top of his game. Kessel was on top of his game. And he had a problem with. So it's still not perfect, but overall, his overall game, I've liked it. He doesn't get himself in too many jackpots in the defensive zone, which is what I was worried about. You know, he seems to compete very hard. I mean, he's not afraid, even though he's not the biggest thing in the world. I mean, he's not afraid to get behind the net and start competing and you know, battle for pucks and do the best he can back there. But I don't know. They sometimes like eight defensemen here, but now Hunwick is healthy, which would give them eight. You know, one or not? I'm sorry, he's healthier that he's practicing. He's not healthy to come back yet, but he's healthier to practice. I think him being back in the mix probably puts Pilot back in Rochester.
Okay. And I know they were off yesterday, so maybe we'll get a little better idea of the health of the defensemen today, like who might be coming back.
Well, Tennyson went down, but they also had a game. So I don't know if he just went down to play in the game. I know he played because I know he scored. But to play in the game and he would be back, or if that means maybe McCabe or Scandella or even Hunwick are healthy enough that, you know, we'll see them Saturday afternoon.
What happened to Nelson?
He was in a battle with a guy, and all of a sudden he just broke free from the battle, and you could see him holding his side, shoulder, arm, something.
Okay.
And he just went straight to the bench. He just kind of held on. You could tell it was almost like his shoulder failed him or his arm failed him or something. And he went straight to the locker room. He did come back, played one shift in the second period, and that was the end of him. He tried to go with it. So it was just in that battle, something happened. And as I said, he released right away. And it was something on that side, either shoulder, arm, something.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming on as always. Just so you know, we're halfway through Hanukkah. I haven't gotten my gift yet from you.
Happy Hanukkah. I've been telling myself to wish you a happy Hanukkah for 2 days now, and then I forgot.
Well, I mean, a wish is a nice thing. A gift is even nicer. So you'd still got a few days.
But how long did it take me to, talk about the Mets trade, too? That happened a while ago.
Yeah, that doesn't qualify as a gift, Paul.
Well, I'll contact West Herr, and I'll... you know, see about your gift.
Wow, you're getting me a car. You're awesome. I love you, Paul. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Oh, Paul's getting me a car. That is so sweet. Paul's segment with us brought to you by Losi and Ganji Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers.
Couple things. On the Seattle expansion bit, I was just reading about the Seattle hockey team. Lewicki, Tim Lewicki, right? He's the guy that went there. He was with the Leafs at one point.
Oh, is he with Seattle now?
Okay. Yes,
he was with the Kings, too, I think.
Yeah, so the story goes that it's $650 million for the team. They are rebuilding a state-of-the-art kind of place. It's an arena that can be renovated in a very, very big way. It'll cost $800 million. That is...
For the arena?
$800 million for the arena redo. There's going to be a structure next door that has yet to be determined. $50 million for a parking garage. $75 million for a three-sheet training center in north of the city.
A practice facility.
And the expansion fee. According to Lewicki, quote, when this is all said and done, it'll be very close to a $2 billion commitment.
Wow.
With zero public money.
Really? How are they doing that?
Private investors. There's money in Seattle.
Good. Tell them to figure out how we can do it here in New York State.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, here's a team that, whatever, the Bills and the Sabres, whatever, they haven't even gotten to this discussion. So I'm not saying anything about that because... whatever. Nothing has happened other than, like, hey, they're taking a look at their stadiums. These are bridges to cross when we get there. But for what it's worth on Seattle, and again, there's a ton of money out there. So these people that are the private investors are investing thinking they're going to make their money on this,
sure,
on Seattle having a hockey team.
Sure.
But it is $2 billion before the team makes a single dollar.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an outlay, you know, putting out some serious money. I wonder if they'll make... They might get a right. They're still trying to also get a basketball team back, get an NBA
yep,
team,
and that
back.
Might be part of why the investment in the arena to $800 million. You think, well, invest in this,
right?
And I'll cash in on it being both an NHL
That's
and
what
an
I was
NBA
wondering.
Arena.
You'll get revenue from that, or whoever. If there's a main, if the hockey team's the main partner, maybe they work on a deal where they get money from the basketball team as a tenant, or whatever the case may be.
And for the Bills thing, it's super far down the line. It's like the expansion draft of 2021. You know, like, I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to stress about it until it gets to that time. And, you know, I think there are a lot of different ways it could work. But, hey, Seattle, $2
billion. Yeah.
$2
billion. Just to be in the NHL club, huh?
Right, to build a building and to play hockey.
To be in the league that we make fun of all the time. Hey, come join us. See what it's like. 803-0550 to join us. We're taking your Josh Allen pulse today. What do you think? Last couple games from Josh Allen. You can share your thoughts on that and whatever else you want. Bills play the Jets on Sunday. It is a home game. The weather is looking good at this point. Partly cloudy, low 30s. Doesn't look like any precipitation issues. Winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. We will have you covered. So Fantasy Breakfast at 7, Game Day at 8, Countdown to Kickoff at 10, Jets-Bills kickoff at 1, Pulse Game Show with Shope and the Bulldog, and then the Overtime Show with Nate Geary. That's our plan Sunday. Make sure you join us on Game Day here on WGR.
You never know when it could be. When it could be your time, so it's the NFL for the best of the best, and you know, it's a performance-based league, I guess. And I'm looking forward to the guys, you know, that we got right now, and we're going to be working extremely hard to build on these last 4 weeks.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen getting ready to take on, we think, fellow rookie quarterback Sam Darnold Sunday at the stadium. Let's talk fantasy. I actually do have a Josh Allen fantasy question to bring up with our fantasy football expert. That would, of course, be Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports, who is joining us right now on our Western Hotline. Scott, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. Happy Thursday, sir.
It's same to you, and happy playoffs to everybody who is qualified as their ticket punched. Of course, the cool kids can skip this segment because they may have a bye.
I have a bye, Scott. Thank you.
Take the next 12 minutes off.
Yeah, thank you. You know,
some of us have to slog it out in the wild card round.
It made me think, not to say that, you know, I want the rules changed after the fact, but I wonder if there are any leagues where a first round bye you could. Again, I'm the one with the bye, so I'm asking this. I might want to say, as part of the bye, you get the highest of your two scores from the bye week or the game week because, you know, you should be rewarded. And, you know, depending on how much you want to reward that team, you'd say, you could say the average of the two, you could say, but then you don't want one pulling it down. So, I don't know. I just think it's an idea for a league to say your bye week, your week counts, and if your score there is higher, then you get to use that score, just as an idea to kind of shake up a league.
Obviously, the advantage of the bye is that you don't have to play and you can tailor your moves to the next week. But I've heard of some leagues that have a home field advantage where you maybe start off with 5 points or 10 points or, you know, whatever is relative to your scoring system that seems like an advantage. So it's stuff to play around with. And also, I want people to know if they play on Yahoo, whether this applies for this year or next year, we have customizable seating. So if you have an unusual set of rules, like a lot of my leagues, the final playoff spot will just go to the team with the most points. It doesn't matter what your record is. So if you're one of those teams that scored like crazy but just kept getting unlucky in close games, maybe you make the playoffs. On Yahoo, you can go, the commissioner can go in and decide the seeding is whatever he wants it. You know, he can say, this team, I know they're 6-7, but I'm making them the number one seed. Obviously, you have to set these rules up ahead of time. I'm not telling anybody to change their rules now. But, you know, if you're playing fantasy baseball, if you're playing fantasy hockey, fantasy basketball, or if you're going to play football with us next year, and I hope you will, keep in mind that you can customize your seating on Yahoo.
Which is big, because it's fun to have those funky rules that you kind of tailor and you kind of just
absolutely
do your own thing. A home, house rules, as they say. So anyway.
Hey, Scott, is there such a thing as fantasy playoff advice? Like, is there anything you would do any differently or suggest an approach any different than you would during any of your regular season leagues that you're in?
Yeah, there's a few things. This is a time of year where I'm more likely to hold two defenses. I'll look ahead on things like that. Minnesota, I probably wouldn't use their defense this week at Seattle, but they host Miami next week, probably a really good spot. Houston has Indianapolis this week, not the greatest spot. Andrew Luck is really good about avoiding sacks, but Houston has a lesser opponent next week, so I'm playing for that. Generally with your bench, you're looking for a lot more likely to be handcuffing players. I don't really like doing that early in the season, but we've seen it pay off, obviously, the Kansas City situation, the Pittsburgh situation. It's a time where I might handcuff a position I might not normally handcuff. I might pick up Dallas Goedert if I was invested in Zach Ertz, something like that. And so it's just, you know, depth is important during the bye weeks where you need to have a good fourth receiver, a good fifth receiver. Now you're trying to roll out your best starters, and your bench is more of an insurance policy than it is guys that you plan on playing proactively.
You mentioned defense. I've got a two-part question about the Bills, and I want to get to Josh Allen, too, with you. But how has the Bills' defense been? And would this be a game to play the Bills' defense, which has been good, and they're facing a Jets offense that's got, like, three touchdowns in the last five games?
It might have an interception-prone Sam Darnold.
And Darnold coming back, right.
Yeah, Buffalo's my number two defense for this week, and you're always looking for a favorite. I like to generally have a higher favorite for my defense, but this Buffalo unit has been, as you guys know, I mean, anytime I talk about the Bills, I know I'm talking to the experts, but this defense has been great all season, and the one problem with it for fantasy purposes has been sometimes the offense would sell it down the river because they just couldn't move the ball. And you know, with Allen being such a fun, productive player the last couple of weeks, and we're starting to see Zay Jones. I mean, Zay Jones, I think, I'm not saying I would play him in a smaller league, but I have some teams that have Zay Jones, and I'm thinking of playing him. I mean, he's, you know, a lot of people lost Emmanuel Sanders this week. You may not like Corey Davis going up against Jacksonville. Zay Jones may be a fantasy factor. Back to Buffalo, because the offense is now a credible unit, or at least right, you know, with Josh Allen, I think gives it a fighting chance. I think it's a top five defense. I have it number two right now. If you wanted to play Pittsburgh or Jacksonville, that's fine. I mean, a lot of times the defense is the matchup. And remember, I know this doesn't always carry over from one game to another game, but the last time these two teams played, they went to New York and they beat the living snot out of them. So this is certainly a matchup that the Bills seem to like. Seems like they're hitting their peak right now. I like Allen's a great fantasy play because he runs the ball so aggressively. You just hope he doesn't get hurt.
We're just going to get to that. We've got a number of tweets asking, who does Allen start over? Like, how high on the list of quarterbacks is Allen? And it's also going to be a strange scenario because if you're a Bills fan watching him grow, but you have him as a fantasy player, when he starts to run, you might be thinking, run. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, all the points.
Well, I have him. I have him over, it's interesting, Lamar Jackson, who's a guy he's compared to a lot because they both run the ball, but I have him over Jackson, I have him over Dak Prescott, I have him over Carson Wentz, in part because Wentz is playing the Dallas defense. Man, did they look great last week against New Orleans. We'll see if they can carry it over. I have him over Baker Mayfield, I have him over Marcus Mariota, I have him over Matthew Stafford, who's been killing me. I think he's very difficult to trust. So it's not that Allen is a must play, but there are several, and you know, Mitch Trubisky is off a multiple-week layoff. If you didn't want to use Trubisky, I'm not going to say you're wrong. Kirk Cousins at Seattle, to me, is not an automatic start. So Josh Allen is not fantasy royalty yet, but he is certainly in play as a possible quarterback one in a regular league. And if you're in a league that starts more than one quarterback, I think he's a dynamite quarterback too.
But in play because of – I mean, how much in play because of what he's done with his legs the last 2 weeks? Or is there an element to it in the passing game that he's in play? He's running for
status,
you know.
Correct. I believe he has the most quarterback rushing yards in back-to-back games in NFL history, which is incredible when you think of some of the athletes who have played this position. And I mean, let's face it, that play he made, it's a shame that the pass wasn't a little bit further or Clay didn't adjust to it more. But when I saw Allen running around that final play, mm-hmm. I mean, who does he remind you of? John Elway? Steve Young? I mean, you need to do that more consistently, and I get worried when he keeps turning his back on the play because you just worry that some guy is going to flatten him into next week.
Yeah.
But the point is, there's upside here. The guy's got a cannon for an arm. He's competitive as all get out. He's certainly athletic. And you know, he's got, you know, rookie quarterback. I mean, we've seen Mayfield have his good games and his bad games. Obviously, Darnold has been kind of a hit or miss. Josh Rosen has been, I think, a little bit of a disappointment in Arizona. But it takes a while to know what a rookie quarterback is. I mean, rookie year, Jared Goff, we all thought he was a bust. Carson Wentz didn't look that great his first year after maybe three or four games. He was a borderline MVP candidate last year. So it's hard to know 3 or 4 months in. But Allen gives you a chance. I'm excited to see where it goes. Again, he's got the tools. If you don't have that arm, there's nothing they can do. There's no amount of weight room work you can do to get that arm. You either have it or you don't. And he's doing it with very ordinary receivers. Again, I'm excited to see what Jones has done. I think getting rid of Benjamin was the right move. He was just getting in the way of development of other players anyway. So, I think this could be something in a couple of years. Right now, it's because he's running that we make him fantasy relevant.
Yep.
But he has a chance to be, you know, a passing quarterback that we want to use in fantasy in going seasons.
There was it's not Josh Allen, but I did want to ask you if there is a fantasy rookie of the year. Is it Barkley, or am I missing somebody?
Yeah, it's, you know, for the actual award, maybe Mayfield will win, but it's going to be Barkley.
Okay.
Although Philip Lindsay is probably the pickup of the year, and man, I mean, undrafted, out of Colorado, still lives with his parents, just a humble guy.
Millennial.
These are millennials, right? Don't want to move out. So, you know, we'd all thought Freeman was going to be the rookie to own in Denver. And I mean, I guess they probably knew Lindsay was pretty good when they gave him Terrell Davis's number. I mean, I don't think they would hand that out lightly, but what a dynamite player he is. And I'm ashamed to tell you, I'm in a lot of leagues. I don't have Philip Lindsay on a single team. And
how did you miss that one?
I think I made one of the worst mistakes you can make, which is that I overrated the players on my team and I wasn't aggressive enough to get Lindsay after that first week, where you have to say, you know what, maybe this guy isn't that good. Maybe, you know, Lindsay, of course, a little bit undersized. He's only about 190 or so. And, you know, sometimes you just have to say, well, he makes splashy plays. So what if he doesn't carry the ball 25 times?
There's a football game tonight. Not the most exciting football game tonight. Any plays worthwhile tonight?
I think Jacksonville, you can just skip over the entire offense other than Fournette, who will probably get 25-plus carries. And my conundrum is what to do with Corey Davis. Mariota's actually been really good for fantasy in four of his last five games. The one game he crapped out on was against Indianapolis where he got hurt. But Jacksonville's defense, you know, I wonder, when they benched Bortles, anytime a team identifies a scapegoat and they say, look, we're going to blame it all on this one guy, I almost feel like it gives everybody else a sense of alertness and urgency that's like, okay, we're blaming it on Bortles. We have to step it up or else they're going to stop blaming it on us too. I'm not surprised that Jacksonville gave us their best effort last week. I think it's a low-scoring game. The total, I think, what, 37-38, which in today's NFL is tiny. Don't trust Deion Lewis. I would probably not want to play Mariota proactively. My big problem, I'm still not sure what I'm going to do. I have Corey Davis on teams that have reasonable alternatives, including, again, I think Zay Jones is in play.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to make that decision at 8:11 p.m. tonight, and I'll probably be regretting it about a half hour into the game, no matter what I do. In fact, I may not even watch this game. There's a bunch of hockey games tonight.
it's a smart move.
This is the night where you tell your significant other who's not a football fan, say, you know what, honey? I'm going to give up the game tonight. Let's go trip.
Let's go Christmas tree shopping.
Yeah. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
The Great British Baking Show.
I'm going to give up the football game for you.
Oh, I forgot about that.
You're going to watch the Great British Baking Show. Yeah. It's on Netflix.
There you go.
Hey, real quick, because somebody tweeted in, wanted to know if they want your advice, Scott, Luck versus Houston or Josh Allen versus the Jets?
I slightly prefer Luck because I think Frank Reich did an amazing job with that offense, and I think he has more to work with. It's a question, but Luck's been so consistent. I know they had a stink bomb last week at Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I'll rule that out. I still don't think Houston is anywhere near as good as their record. I know they have some big names on defense, but you can move the ball. And Mayfield, I think, threw for over 400 yards in that game. I'm going to side with Luck, but it's a legitimate question. I don't blame somebody for asking it.
All right. As always, thank you, and good luck with your playoffs.
Yeah, good luck to you guys. We'll talk next week in the semifinals.
Scott Pianowski joining us. Follow him on Twitter for fantasy. Well, first, check out his work and the Yahoo Fantasy work at sports.yahoo is their website.
I've given all my players.
And Scott's on Twitter. I'm sorry, at Scott _ Pianowski. Go ahead.
I've given all my players permission to take the week off.
Trip?
Fine. Not going to worry about it.
So you're not going to get upset if you see like Instagram pictures
no.
on some
Adam Thielen,
island somewhere?
Julio Jones. Cam Newton, you guys do what you got to do. You put in a lot of work this year.
Uh-huh.
I want you to unplug, get gone, get out of here. I don't want to see you around the facility.
You lose your first fantasy playoff game, you're going to catch a lot of crap for that.
No, my guys know what's up. We got a great culture. We do.
I would keep them in town, make them watch film.
Please. Hey, speaking of the Great British Baking Show, I know, right? I know what you're thinking.
Tease it. We got to get to break.
I want to tell right now. It's not worth a tease. I've got a better tease. We're talking about Justin Timberlake on the other side.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's a better tease?
Yeah.
Okay.
He postponed another concert and apparently talked about it with Jimmy Kimmel, so whatever. I don't have to tell the Great British Baking Show. Okay. I don't have to tell it. It's fine.
God help me. Extendo
Sports. How much time? Well, you know, go ahead.
You have a little. You got about a minute wiggle room.
You know
maybe.
How we have the last minute remaining in the show?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I want to get the guy from the Great British Baking Show to say, Bakers, you have 1 minute remaining.
Oh, I like the accent.
Yeah, and we'll use that.
Sure.
And we'll mix that in sometimes.
Okay.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
So do you have your baking show thing?
That was the baking show thing. Justin Timberlake postponed another concert.
But I thought he rescheduled one for Buffalo, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to be October 28th.
He's postponed it twice, I think?
Now to December 19th. And then, no, I might have that backwards,
April.
Whatever. Postponed again. There is no makeup date. Not yet.
I thought they announced a makeup date.
Oh, did they? I didn't see that. I saw
a tweet
this morning. Oh, no. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, they did announce a date because John Groziel says he can't go to it.
Then I can take his ticket.
Perfect.
You want to go?
By the way,
I'll make that your Christmas gift.
We should start doing that.
Going to Justin Timberlake shows?
Doctor's orders. My vocal cords.
Boy, you sound
terrible.
We're in
one of the lines of work where we can get away with that.
Yeah.
You just text me like,
I got no voice.
I got no voice today. I'd call, but I've got no voice.
Yeah, well, you have to text it. You can't leave a voicemail.
Of course, yeah.
Well, the show would be better if we had no voice.
Speaking of which, I'm off tomorrow.
Enjoy your day.
So I'm going to go ahead and, I don't know. I'm going to see Hamilton. Have not seen it yet.
You'll love it.
Know nothing about it. I mean, I know it's some.
He dies in the end.
Thanks.
Okay.
I mean, everybody does.
Yeah. That's why I knew it was no spoiler alert.
Exactly.
All right. Enjoy the show. Back tomorrow. Instigators coming up next. Have a great day. Be careful with all the snow, okay? Take your time. Don't be driving crazy.